Welcome to Vermont Favorites, a production of WBTV LP Burlington. I'm Adam Rabin. Each week I talk with musicians, artists, performers, and creators about their unique journeys and what they love about living in Vermont. My guest today is an artist who has worked in Vermont and Berlin, in Germany, not Berlin, Vermont. She is also the creative director and curator for Edgewater Gallery in Stowe, Vermont, which is where we are recording today's episode. Please welcome Vermont favorite, Kelly Holt. Good morning.
Good morning, Adam.
So we're at the Edgewater Gallery right downtown Stowe, and you're a curator here.
Yes. So I joined Edgewater Gallery in January, and we actually have four different galleries as part of Edgewater. So two are in Middlebury at the Falls and on the Green, and then we added a gallery in Bozeman, Montana, and Stowe is the newest gallery. So Stowe opened up last fall.
Bozeman, Montana?
Bozeman, Montana.
How did we end up over there?
The owners, that is one of their favorite places. So,
gotcha. So
it's very cool because we get to collaborate and share artists when needed, or get to make different discoveries and share our collections and kind of build on the brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you get started? How did you get involved with the Edgewater Gallery in Stowe, Vermont?
I live here in Stowe, all of my friends are artists, so we're always trying to seek new opportunities for each other. And
this isn't your first curating gig, is
no,
that true?
When I first moved to Vermont about 15 years ago, I curated at West Branch Gallery, which is also here in Stowe.
Yeah.
And then I've done some other curating adventures at art centers like River Arts in Morrisville, also at Johnson State College, and some pop-up exhibits.
Yeah, Johnson, that's where you went to school, right? Your graduate program?
Yes, yep.
What did you, well, you were born in, starting from the beginning, you were born in Boston, and you grew up outside Boston, is that right?
Yes, I grew up in Melrose, so at the end of the Orange Line T, so it's about 11 miles north. Yeah, so I'm a Boston Irish girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I go back often. My whole family is still there.
Oh, wonderful.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, just off the Orange Line.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Somerville for a year, so I know the red and the green line well.
Oh, terrific.
But not so much the Orange Line.
Yeah.
It's another world. As far as the tea goes.
Somerville is like the it place right now. It's like the most up and coming.
Yeah, it kind of was 20 years ago when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it kind of it's still like the cooler version of Boston, I think. You know, that and Cambridge, just a little younger, a little more progressive happening.
Yeah.
But then you went up to Johnson for your master's program.
Yes.
Right?
Yep, I was already living here then.
Oh, I didn't realize. Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you end up moving to Vermont?
Just wanting to live the dream like a lot of us do. Coming up on weekends and hiking and cross-country skiing and then, you know, more and more weekends. And then how do you make the jump? And then just did it.
Permanent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Did you come right into Stowe? Is that where you first moved?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. So Johnson, what were you studying at Johnson that, you know, when you, because you did your undergraduate program where?
I was at Boston College.
Okay. So you're still
in studio art and also English lit.
Okay.
And had an advertising career there before I jumped up to Vermont.
You know, I've interviewed a few artists who also had their first job out of college be advertising.
Right.
Which feels like so antithetical in some respects, but at the same time, it's kind of like one of those necessary evils. How was it getting, you know, being in that commercial world?
Right.
At that age?
Well, it was kind of a practical way to apply, you know, an arts degree, but I interned all through college, so...
Okay.
That was my job. I worked at different agencies and was able to have a job before I graduated. And
gotcha.
On the creative side, which was key, that was really
So you still got to exercise your creativity, but, you know, just doing it for, like, more commercial, conventional clients.
Definitely. And in those days, the budgets were still really big, and It was a really exciting industry to be in. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you miss it at all?
Or any really.
No.
Yeah.
Good answer.
lots of all-nighters.
Oh, yeah.
But also, you know, taking your clients to Fenway Park to a Red Sox game was part of your job. So there were some really good parts too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there is money in it, so there's there's some appeal.
Yeah.
And then you moved up. So what did you continue studying at Johnson? Did you get more into the more like deep, just straight art side of things?
A little more education. I took some art classes. I did some film and sculpture. Learned how to weld, which I hadn't done in my undergrad, which was really fun.
Fascinating. What was that like, getting into, like, welding?
Yeah, it was very physical and kind of dangerous and exciting all at the same time. Yeah. And but mainly what I wanted to tune up my skills with was digital photography and video. So I did more of that, and then also studied art education and got my license to teach. So that's kind of been a side gig off and on through my career, is teaching workshops and camps. And
oh, great. Okay. So so much I want to ask you about that. I want to ask you about the teaching side, but also the work you're doing. You really dove into the mixed media once you got up here to Johnson. It wasn't just painting. You took on all kinds of, you know, like you said, video and so on. What drew you to say, you know, instead of just focusing on painting or that flat graphic style, to say, I want to work with metal and I want to work with big objects and moving pictures, if you will?
Yeah, the more I got into experimenting with different media, the more I really kind of put down my paintbrushes and always had cameras with me at different points. And I really enjoy more of an experimental way of working. So sometimes it's the things that aren't planned, or, you know, printing photographs on an alternate substance and distressing them and collaging them back into something, or layering moving images on top of each other, or using them with still photography for installations.
Yeah. One of the themes that I see, and I think you've mentioned throughout a lot of your work, is, I think there was a phrase that you used somewhere, capturing the chaos. Something of those two words, capturing and chaos, which seem fundamentally opposed, but that's part of the challenge. That's where the magic can happen. Was it about that? Because we're here at the gallery and I'm looking at these pieces. You know, there's action pictures, a little blurry, and there's the mixed, and you don't know sitting down what it's going to look like exactly. And the subjects themselves are chaotic.
They are, yeah. It kind of goes back to being in museums. I'm trying to remember where. I guess it was in New York City at MoMA, discovering Gerhard Richter's paintings. And Gerhard Richter paints in such a style that they look like photographs, that are a little blurred at the edges, and the figure, he does these figures that are very haunting, like their eyes are blurred a little bit, or you can see movement, like there's a little bit of tension there. And there's something about his paintings that when I look at them, they're graphic and wonderful, and then there's something about them that makes you feel on edge, like something's off, something's about to happen, or things are about to sort of, you know, all come together. And through that juxtaposition, it creates kind of a tension.
There is definitely, I know what you're talking about. And just looking at yours, that there is unexpected motion in a still object.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit of the magic that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I love to, I use older cameras, so I don't really use fancy cameras with large lenses unless...
Film or digital?
Digital,
okay.
But I don't really use sort of more professional cameras unless I'm doing documentation work of a performance or something. But I have these old kind of beater cameras. I have a Leica, which is my very favorite, and a Canon. and I use them in all different ways, kind of moving the camera or adjusting settings to create a blur that's intentional.
Yeah. How are you finding, and this is kind of nuts and bolts, getting black and white to have that signature black and white feel on a digital camera?
Mm-hmm.
How was the process of finding that? Because I have a digital camera, you know, I think it's a Nikon.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's color and I can like desaturate it after the fact, but it's not the same as, you know, old style shooting in black and white. And you seem to really have captured that black and white feel.
Thank you.
Black and white film feel.
Yeah, that's really what I'm going for. And often what I do is I work with certain cameras and only shoot in black and white. So I'm thinking in black and white, I'm shooting in black and white. And I try to get kind of my abstractions and blurs as I'm taking the photos rather than manipulating them too much in post.
It's in-camera work. So you're like monitoring them in black and white, you know, through...
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
So I may have a viewfinder screen that I'm looking in that's away from the camera, but I'm always trying to sort of capture that texture, that movement, like here are the people walking down the street and I want to just move the camera just at the very end and give it that little bit of movement that
turns. So you play with the exposure time.
Yeah.
Much like you would an old style film camera.
Yeah, or I collage photos with pieces of paintings or graphic pieces that I've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes I like to use encaustic, so I like to use wax to make some photos a little more sculptural. So that takes them a little more out of the traditional black and white.
Oh, interesting. Where in the process are you doing that work?
So that would be at the very end. Yeah. So you print out your photos, and I like to work on panel. I also have mounted photography on canvas and just left the canvas raw. But I've used encaustic when I work on panel, and that would go on at the very end.
Yeah, how do you get into it? Because there's not just the artistic eye that you need, but there's also a very technical, scientific side to working with all these materials.
Right.
What drew you into that? How did that education, self-education or wherever, to play with these materials?
Actually, Don Hansen, who is an artist here in Stowe, he's been my partner for a bunch of years, and he's a very much an experimental artist, and so he inspires me to go into different directions or will push me in a certain direction, or he has some gear that I use because it's there in our studios. And yeah, so sometimes it's collaboration and sometimes it's trial and error, and I certainly ruin a lot of pieces along the way.
Yeah. Well, I guess, not being afraid to ruin stuff is pretty key. Yeah, goodness knows we've all made our share of messes.
Yeah, and I think when you're not as afraid to ruin the piece and you just try to be free with it, it ends up being a little more genuine and then somehow a little bit better quality.
Yeah. Okay.
Or achieve sort of what you thought you wanted, but you didn't really know how to get there.
Yep. Part of it's unconscious. Mm-hmm. You mentioned collaboration and also like trial and error. So there's a large chunk of time that you need to spend on your own, just like, you know, banging on the canvas and playing with the camera. But there's also, you're very much involved. You're not afraid to get out there and talk to other artists. And also, by virtue of the fact that you're here running, you know, curating a gallery, you're very much as much a part of the art scene as you are an artist yourself. I think about, like, myself. Like, sometimes I'll lock myself in a room, and then I'll realize I've been, you know, locked in for too long, and I need to get out. And then I'll be out too long, and I find I need to get back in and just do stuff myself again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of go back and forth. Man, I really need some outside opinions or some outside input on this. What has your experience been like? Because ultimately, this work has your name on it. But how do you find being involved in a scene at large?
Mm-hmm. I think curating can be very challenging because here in Vermont, the art scene is very vibrant and rich with many layers. And so many people that live here, I think, are artists in some degree, musicians or performers or dancers or visual artists, that we tend to all kind of run around in the same circles and know each other. So it can be challenging because you need to keep your goals very pure with what you're curating and which hat you're wearing, whether it's for commercial use or you want to do something kind of radical and like on the pop-up scene. So you have to kind of be really clear with yourself which hat you're wearing to do the best job you can. But also, when you're curating and working with other artists and inviting them to a project or an exhibition, you want it to be the highest quality you can, because your name is behind it, but also that's how their work is being presented to the public. And so there's a responsibility to do right by everyone that you're inviting into a project.
You're not just beholden to your own self. You know, you got other people that are relying on you, and kind of steps up your game. A little bit of peer pressure.
Yes.
A little one-upmanship.
Yes. And also for some artists, it's difficult to put yourself out there in, in venues that you haven't before. And so, you know, I feel responsible to, when I work with artists, to really respect their goals and needs and where they would like to see their art presented.
Yeah, they can rely on you just as much as you can on them.
Yeah, and one thing that I've talked to a lot of curators here in the Vermont scene about is you really either have to have your artist hat or your curator hat on in a certain, in a given project. Because if you're
not both.
Not both. Right. Because I think as a curator, you have a different level of objectivity. And if you're the artist in an exhibit, you have so much passion about what you're trying to say and how you're trying to put it out there. So it's almost like when you're working as a curator, you're almost a little bit removed and looking at the big picture.
Okay.
And calling the shots, you know, that way rather than being super involved.
I guess as a curator, you can't, it's tough to have the passion and the abandon that you need to be the one creating. And if you're the one creating, you probably shouldn't be the person objectively picking what's, you know, should go here, what should go there.
Right.
Because it'll all just be, you get a little tunnel vision.
Yeah, so kind of like a director of a film, in a way.
So speaking of film, right?
Yeah.
What kind of things have you done film-wise as far as being kind of a director? Because I've seen some of your, some of the videos that you have up on your site. Tell me about some of the work that you've done film-wise, moving picture-wise.
Sure. I started out in grad school doing, my thesis was on art and identity. And so my videos were all self-portrait videos, which after a time can be really draining because you can't get out of your own way, right?
Literally.
But then I started traveling to Germany pretty much every year out of the last 4 years. My brother and his family live over there. And so each year I would go and do a street photography and video adventure with my brother, and we have found ourselves in Brussels and in Berlin quite a few times. And what really excites me the most about making moving images is kind of site-specific work in very urban environments. One of my very favorite places to work is a train station, which as you can see from some of these pieces around, I spend a lot of time kind of crawling around train platforms. Recording sound.
What is it about the train that appeals to you? What's it speaking to?
I just really love the excitement of watching people in transit, whether they're commuting or heading on a huge adventure.
Right.
Often people are alone, and so kind of just watching people and wondering where they're going, what they're doing. Lately, my work has been, in a current collaboration, has been really rooted in the concept of sliding doors.
Okay.
So as the trains pull in, or you're rushing to catch that train and the doors are opening or closing, what does it mean if you jump on at the last minute with your suitcase and you make the train? How does that change your life and the twists and turns versus if you missed a train and it takes you on a different adventure, or the people you meet on the next car? Or
there's a lot. There's a very specific image of, you know, doors closing and people jumping onto trains and getting off trains. But there's a huge unknown. It's like, what's the story behind this? And there's so much that people can read into that. Each person can read their own sense of travel and adventure into that, whatever they want it to mean.
Yeah. And the culture over there in Germany and Frankfurt and Berlin and Wiesbaden and the various places I've visited and worked on film and photography. The system of travel is very chop-chop, like very organized, and there's a certain manner.
Yeah.
And so I was really like, I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And then once I did, I was able to, you know, to focus on the art making, you know, the image making of it all.
I mentioned chaos before, but there's also a very certain sense of order.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get stereotypical, but it's just funny you were talking about, you know, the German trains and how everyone always associates them with being very, you know, particular and precise.
Right.
And at the same time, you're still as much of an ambassador as you're trying to be, figuring out the culture over there. You're also capturing it, and you definitely seem to be steeped in it. There still is that sense of chaos. There's still the motion. There's still the uncertainty, even within the order. And there's that balance between order and chaos that's draws the viewer in to a lot of your work.
And there's something about kind of the grit or an edginess of a city that I really am drawn to.
I guess you get more of that in Germany, in Berlin, say, than Stowe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the closest you can get here would be Montreal, which is a fantastic place to go and do.
Have you done much work up there?
I've done a bit. When I worked at River Arts in Morrisville, I did a workshop with a group called Learning Together, and they were young teen moms or at-risk teens that use this kind of support program to help them get through and graduate high school.
Yeah.
And it's a terrific program. It was run by Marilyn Zofar, and they partnered with River Arts. And so I did a whole photography workshop series with the girls.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do something. They were doing writing and kind of exploring their identity. We wanted to do something that was completely out of their comfort zone, and that would be really transformative for them and their art in the end.
Yeah.
And so we decided none of them had been out of the country, so Montreal was a really easy way to do it. So we got, you know, the enhanced license and went up. And we just had one day because so many of them had babies that were being cared for, and so we had this specific period of time and found that there was such great energy in the city. We photographed in the Modern Art Museum, kind of in the edgier parts of town, photographing some street art, and then just moving and exploring and letting one, you know, one.
How did it go over with the teens? How were they, how open were they, or how easy was it to get them to try something so, I don't want to say unessential, but so indulgent, say, as photography? You know, when they're probably so focused, spend so much time focusing on things that need to happen for them, for their kid, and so forth.
Right. They were super inspired and kind of worked on themes before we went. And so they had, smokestacks or people walking on the street, or one girl was shooting like all the bottom half of something. So there'd be a composition. And so they kind of had something to focus on as an assignment and a number of photos that they wanted to take. And they just went with it. They really were so free with it and relaxed and just really allowed themselves to explore. And from that, when we came back, we produced a book of their photography and had an exhibit.
Oh, wow, that must have been that must have been really flattering and uplifting for them to see their work in print.
It was so, their work was so strong and so genuine. And it was great to get to teach them a little bit of what it's like to be a professional artist. You know, you kind of always have to have a little graphic design, and how do you present yourself, and how do you pull together an exhibition, and how do you make money from it?
Yeah.
So we sold their photos, and all the money went back into their program. And it was really great. It was really the singular, most meaningful teaching experience I've had, and I think I got much more out of it than they did. Just
really?
The gift of going on that journey with
probably
them.
maybe even reminding yourself of where your eyes were when you first started out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, when you like seeing young, kids and how they're interacting with the world. And you're just like, yeah, I've seen it all. I'm this age. I've, been around for decades and decades. And then you see a kid ask the strangest question because they have such fresh eyes, and to see how someone else is perceiving something for the first time is a good reminder of maybe where you were however many years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. They probably also surprised you with, what kind of things were you surprised by these, for lack of a better word, novices? You know, they're coming at it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of surprises did you see in their work, or things that you weren't expecting?
Right. I thought they would be really intimidated. Well, of course, I took them on the trains when we were there.
Of course.
But I thought they would be intimidated being around people and taking their photos. And so we had talked about, when do you need to ask permission? What are, if someone is looking at you like they don't want to be captured as they're commuting to work. You need to honor that. And that was something that really surprised me, is they didn't have very much trouble with that. They were really pretty confident in making those decisions. And
That's great.
And they did a great job photographing reflections and really kind of experimented a bit. So it was nice.
You mentioned earlier you got your degree from Johnson in part studying education, and that's where this came from. What other teaching experiences have you had?
So I taught a public art class at Johnson State College, a murals kind of oriented class, and I've done camps and workshops at Helen Day Art Center.
Oh, where's that?
Also, so it's 2 blocks away here
Stowe. Yeah, I need to spend more time in Stowe, apparently.
And I did photography workshops every summer for a couple of years, and last year we did a public art camp for the first time, and my group of students were all little environmental activists.
Yeah, how old?
So they were, 7 to 12.
Oh, okay.
And I happened to have all young women.
Yeah.
And they were all super interested in taking on climate change.
Through art.
And so how rewarding is that for me? Because that's something that I really care about also.
Yeah.
And so they depicted on one side of a mural what a healthy ocean environment would be, and then on the other side what will happen if you don't pay attention to pollution and changes in weather. And so they took it to the jungle. They had a small town. Yeah, the ocean and a rainforest. So it was just really fun because they studied kind of facts and figures of what was behind it, and then were just super free in painting these large murals.
So. 7 to 12. You've also done collaboration with one of my previous guests, Erica Senft Miller.
Yes.
Tell me about the experience you had with her, because that was a great interview, which I think you listened to, and that was so great getting to hear her story. And she's obviously spent time in Germany. That's, you know, where she's from. Did you meet her before or after you started spending time in Berlin?
I met her I followed her work before I knew her, and then met her before I started spending time in Berlin. And so that was always kind of a touchstone that we had,
right?
Which has been really fun. So I've been working with Erica for, I'd say, about a year now, maybe a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And she has, her background is in dance and choreography.
I'm trying to figure out where these are connecting, right?
Yeah, so how we first started working with each other is I went to one of her performance collaborations, which was called Sleeping Babies,
right.
Social Sculptures, which I think you did talk about.
Yeah, that was the skateboard thing at the south end of Burlington.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was dance, it was skate, it was Michael Jagger was involved and did a zine. Mm-hmm. It was street art. And
there was a video element to it.
There was a video element, and I went just as an invited audience member, and it was very interactive, but I couldn't help but bring my cameras with me.
Oh.
And so I photographed a bunch just as I went through the experience, shared them with her, and from there we kind of got involved in kind of building layer upon layer that that event then turned into an event at Maven Skate Shop in Burlington where the zine was built upon and photography was produced and there were videos that four different artists were doing from footage for the event. And so I participated at that level.
Okay.
So putting together moving images and stills for that. And then we've just kind of started working on so many different projects from different angles.
Yeah.
Sometimes I document her work. So she has a dance company that's called the Erica Miller Performance Lab.
Yep.
And they've had various residencies in a gym where they were doing training. And so I documented that journey.
Yeah.
And then the documentation turned into a video that played at a pop-up event that they then did. It was a drive-in to the gym pop-up event.
Fascinating.
And so I had my images on the screens and they were performing a new layer. And then also what I love about Erica is that she is always seeking new site-specific journeys and kind of collaborations. And you never know what's going to be next. One of my favorite ones that we did was outside the Karma Bird House in Burlington.
Where was that?
Outside of the Karma Bird House.
Okay.
Which has Maglianero Cafe in the bottom.
Yeah.
It was the old JDK
office
building.
Yeah.
And so her studio's there, and she was working on a series of performances with the dancers, and we decided to have a pop-up performance at night in January in the snow in the parking lot. And it kind of meandered down train tracks, and it had this yellow glow of lights in the parking lot, and so it created this really kind of otherworldly kind of dark scene. And so to have the challenge to document that in the cold and you're kind of climbing around on snowbanks or lying on the ground in the snow trying to get certain angles, it's really...
She has a really interesting eye, not just for the movement that she choreographs, but also for the surroundings. Like she's almost like painting a picture with a very interesting palette. Just something visual to look at all over.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, the negative space and the people as well, which I really appreciate. So it's great that you're capturing that again, and now through another lens, literally,
literally,
you know, not just your own personal eyes, your artistic vision, but, you know, and then capturing it. So it's like her work has I pardon the pun, her work has legs. You know, she makes one piece of work as a choreographer, but it gives birth to a few other angles.
Right on. That's exactly it. And what's really exciting as a collaborator is that you never know what the next layer is going to be. So it could be your footage with someone else's, and that experience or next idea grows from that performance into a new collaboration. And so I've gotten to work with other photographers like Renee Greenlee and Micah Dudash, who's a great filmmaker.
He videoed the Sleeping Babies.
The Sleeping Babies.
Yeah, and that was a stunning video that he did.
And getting to shoot alongside him and watch him work, I've learned so much. Mm. So it's really, all these layers of learning from each other, and Erica setting up different settings for us to work in.
Right.
I did my first photo shoot underwater a few months ago.
How was that?
With them.
Yeah.
It was great.
You can't just take 1 year old cameras for that, can you?
So we had the GoPro and an underwater camera. And so it's pushing my photography to its limit in many different ways, because the setting is such an important part of each one, and it's always something different.
It's great, and this is something that I'm starting to push myself for, even at my advanced age, which isn't that advanced, is that I'm finding that if you start hanging around in different circles and you open yourself to the experience, there are new experiences and new challenges that they won't knock you down. You know, it's not much to be afraid of. I wouldn't say there's nothing to be afraid of, but there's not anywhere near as much to be afraid of pushing myself forward. And it sounds like what you're in the same boat is like, you know, you've been doing a certain thing for so long, and then you're like, oh, well, maybe I'll just do something underwater, which I haven't done. I know photography, you know, I know the basics of it, but now let's totally throw everything, most of what I know, out the window and see what we can do in this new environment.
Yeah.
Sounds great that you're opening yourself up to completely new environments to work in.
I love a challenge and a deadline, because it forces me to focus more of myself on my artist self and my creative life, you know, and really dedicate the amount of time and energy that you want to it. Sometimes you get lost and all these other paths, and you're realizing that you're not creating. And so, signing on to those projects really helps push you forward. And one other project that I'm working on is part of, it's a TEDx-style talk series that's happening at Spruce Peak at the Performing Arts Center. Mm-hmm. And it is Spruce Peak Arts collaborating with Helen Day Arts Center. Rachel Moore worked with two other curators on reclamation, which is inspired by the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. And it's women curators and wonderful, really, really high-end, amazing collections of portraits, paintings, photographs that just stop you in your tracks. They're really, really powerful, what it's saying about women and how far we've come and where we are now. And it's really raw and poignant. It's really powerful. And so they partnered with Hope Sullivan as the new executive director of Spruce Peak Arts, and she is an amazing artist and person in terms of putting together different collaborations. And so they're having a series of talks that is springing from this exhibit downtown. And Erica is doing a movement piece and has asked me to join and be the imagery on stage with her moving and interacting in it. So I'm really honored to get to work on that as well.
Yeah. And when's that going up?
So August 4th, it's a one day. So there are all different talks from artists coming at it from all different angles, and each player gets 7 minutes. Hope Sullivan and I and her team at Spruce Peak did a collaboration between Spruce Peak Arts and Edgewater Gallery in the exhibit that we're sitting in. So exploring air.
Yeah.
All of our artists are creating and writing about their interpretations of air through their artwork, and then it's also presented up on the mountain in their theater. And so we've had a couple of events where we had all of our artists up there in their space and celebrating the work and the theme, and then they're bringing the artistic director to the gallery to play music and kind of bring another layer of...
You guys are really going mixed media and just multidiscipline between music and video and movement as well.
Right.
That sounds really interesting. I'm like, I wish I had a pen on me. I got to write down August 4th.
What kind of collaborations have you done recently?
I'll tell you, I've been a musician for, you know, years and years, played in a bunch of bands, also done a lot of writing and recording on my own. The last year or so, I've gotten involved with the Vermont Comedy Club. So as a pianist, accompanist, on a piano. So there's improvisational comedy going on, and I'm kind of underscoring it, or at times playing, improvising show tunes for them to make up words for.
So cool.
So you talk about going from, you know, I know about music and I know what the 12 notes are and how they interact with each other, but it's always been, okay, we're going to write a song, we're going to rehearse it, we're going to record it, we're going to get it just right, and then we'll put it out there. And now it's the complete opposite. It's like, well, take all the music you know, and now forget everything else, because you're going to make stuff up on the spot.
Wow.
And yeah, it's scary the first few times, and I'm like slowly getting more and more comfortable with it. And it's very rewarding in its own right. And again, it's like people I never would have worked with, never would have thought to work with, but it's completely fun, and everyone pushes each other's game up a notch. Everyone's relying on each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you're beholden to other people, which raises the stakes, and it does put that extra little fire under your butt to go out of your comfort zone, to push yourself forward.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, I've been talking with other artists about this a lot, in collaborations, it's so important that you leave your ego at the door, right?
You have to, yeah.
Because otherwise, it really implodes, and it there's no good.
I would almost say you literally can't. I mean, you would just, you wouldn't. Yeah, it simply wouldn't work, especially with improv, because you literally don't know what's going to happen next. And as the accompanist, I'm second fiddle. You know, what they start singing and where they take the scene, that's the show, right?
Right.
I need to support that.
Okay.
You know, and the thing is, all the other bands that I've been in, I'm usually the singer-songwriter.
Okay.
So I'm used to being that leader. I'm used to being the wrangler and the director.
Right.
And now I just have to say, well, I'm writing in the sense that I'm picking what chords to go to, but really, it's not my song. And I know that the improvisers are getting something out of being in a musical environment, because half the people that I do this with, they've never sung in public before. They've done comedy before, or they'll do improv, but they're not like anything more than, you know, shower singers, you know, or car singers. And just, they're doing the same thing. They're like, well, I haven't done this before. You know, let's see what we can do. So there's that sense of community of, we all have each other's backs. And that's what we say before we go on stage every single time. If we all grab each other's, you know, put our hands on each other's backs and say, I got your back.
That's your back.
Great. That's the ritual, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so key, because it's I have your back and I know that you have mine, and there's that trust. And then there's also the release of, all right, well, we're on stage now, so, you know, there's no turning back.
You got to just go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's that trust, self-trust, which is, I think, the other thing that I've been teaching myself more and more over the last, say, 5 or 6 years, is if you sit down to do something and you're under the gun, you know, you have that deadline you're talking about, mm-hmm. if you start worrying about what you're coming up with being crap, then you're going to get in your way. But if you just trust, you know, I've been doing this long enough. I know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm about to do, but in general, I know what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's what comes with time and well, some more than others, but just, you know.
Like the experience.
Yeah. Enjoying the experience, letting go and reveling in the experience, but also I keep coming back to trusting, reminding myself that I trust myself.
Mm-hmm.
The one other project I wanted to ask you about, you did a photo installation at the Bijou in Morrisville.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that, because I saw pictures of it, but I want to know what's behind
right.
that. What's the story behind that?
JR, who's a French artist, mm-hmm. and he's kind of an incognito artist, mm-hmm. where he always wears his hat and sunglasses, and you don't know what his real name is.
Mm-hmm.
I happened upon a TED Talk of his where he won a prize and just started following his work. And he does really large scale kind of global initiatives that speak to something that's going on in our global community. And one of his projects is called the Inside Out Project. And he and his team would go and take portraits of citizens in all different cultures. One really interesting iteration of the project was he was in Israel and in Palestine taking photos of people who had the same jobs. So say a cab driver.
Right.
One
in Israel and one in Palestine.
Putting them together, yeah. And do you know the difference? And, you know, what's the answer?
No.
And so he did this in all different iterations or I'm trying to think of where it was. I think it was in India, and it was a really poor community where they didn't have, a lot of them didn't have roofs over their heads. And so this Inside Out project was taking portraits of faces in the community, kind of uniting them all together, printing them large format. And his usual way, he does wheat paste and paper, but in this situation, they printed it on Tyvek or some kind of plastic and made roofs with all of the eyes and all of the faces facing up into the sky.
Wow.
So powerful. And so it's basically what the Inside Out Project is saying is kind of we're all one global community, and you know we all look different, and we all have different goals. But when you look into someone's eyes or someone's face, like the gaze, you know, is equally special and important no matter where you are. And so I worked with a group of little kids in a camp, and we did photo shoots, and they cropped their eyes and did portraits. And then I also went back to the Learning Together mm-hmm. program and worked with some of those students, and they did portraits, and we put them up. The owners of the Bijou were so really supportive of the project, and we put them up there, and we also...
So these were like these large printouts of just your subject's eyes, just that
so
strip.
We did a series of full-on portraits and a series of eyes, and the portraits were of the little kids and the teens were on the Bijou, and it was kind of second story, so you could see it from pretty far. And then we used the eyes in different construction points in the town of Morrisville. And so the eyes would be on these like construction barriers, and not one mark of graffiti went on those.
How about that?
And it was it was a very cool experience. And so you actually then join JR's project, and you go on the website and you log your, you know, project. And then it's a way for people to go on and see what's happening all around the world.
I was curious how JR found Morrisville, but I guess it wasn't really that way.
No, it was
you guys found him So he was doing this, or other people were doing the same kind of project in other parts
right.
of the world?
So he was involved in a couple in the beginning, and then the projects went on their own. So we were completely on our own. And then you you document and you send him all of your information.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's almost like, you know, a movement in a way, a public art project that will grow in a very grassroots way.
What were some of the other locations and approaches to that?
It was in Paris, India, South America. They were out in the desert doing the Inside Out project. Monasteries, schools, all different. Yeah.
It really is a universal message.
Yeah, and I think from my time recently, last year in Berlin, and experiencing the work that Urban Nation was doing, which they are the first graffiti art and street art museum in the world.
Where is that?
It's in Berlin, Germany.
Okay.
And they have curators come from all over and also artists from all over. And work on, you know, a social, political, environmental, community-oriented topic and have live art happenings and, you know, buildings covered in, you know, beautiful portraits or street art. And that's what they do. And they just have an engine of people coming in through the city. And that's, I'm really most excited about getting involved in projects like that and seeing what's possible.
What's going to be your involvement? What do you hope to do for that?
I hope to sort of, I'd love to seek out a couple of other public art initiatives and join in rather than start one, kind of learn how, how it goes a bit, get a little better with my spray paint cans and stencils.
But you have betrayed yourself a little bit that maybe you do want to do that further down the road.
I do. You're right. I totally do. But I would love to really be involved in some large scale public art projects.
Fascinating.
I got to get better at grant writing.
That's a big part of it. Who was it? I talked with Corinne Yance last week. So I don't know how that relates to the airtime of this episode, but two episodes ago. And she is an artist in Burlington, in South Burlington. And she was talking about, she was lamenting the grant writing process and how there needs to be, that needs to be more of the education, more of the education process, curriculum for just everybody, not just people in school, but how to, that those practical day-to-day, you know, the financing and making it possible to do these works of art. And it often does come down to the money, period. And
that's such a limiting factor sometimes.
Yeah. And it's not, and it's not always that the money isn't there. It's that people don't know how to find it.
Right. Who would be interested in this, whether it's a technique or a cause or, But grant writing is definitely a difficult art.
Have to put you in touch with her, see what she knows that you don't know. Well, at the end of every episode, I like to ask my guest about their favorite things about Vermont. And I want to start with asking you who your favorite Vermonter is.
So really the people that I'm collaborating with at the time on these different art projects or public art projects become my favorite, you know, person, and they always kind of stay that way. So recently I've worked with my curating hat on with artists like Galen Chaney, who's a terrific abstract painter. She has been in Vermont for many years, and now she's down in North Adams, Mass.
Okay.
So I think she still counts as a Vermonter.
Yeah, we'll allow it.
Rachel Moore on her exhibition on Traces. Erica Semph-Miller, who I work with in many layers. And I would say also someone that has taught me sort of the trade of photography and digital manipulation, but also inspired me and given me feedback on projects all along the way over the years, is John Miller. who's a well-known photographer here in Vermont, and he has produced some really high-end books, and recently he did a fantastic exhibition that's going to be at the Vermont Studio Center next. But he's someone that I always call upon to get advice or tell me what's good and what's terrible in my studio, and I really appreciate and value that.
You're definitely making the most of the community as a resource as well as a peer group. Tell me about your favorite Vermont place.
Mount Mansfield.
Yeah.
I have been hiking there for years, and it's kind of my go-to for just kind of meditation, hitting the reset button, getting some good exercise, just hiking on
those. Mount Mansfield's a good exercise.
Hiking just and having it in my sights a lot, you know, as I travel around or drive home at night. It's kind of an inspiring and comforting.
Yeah, a bit of a beacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your favorite Vermont memory?
I would say my favorite memories have been different creative collaborations and or kind of building up to a certain opening or when an artist is going to be talking, kind of celebrating all of that.
Who would you like to collaborate with? Not maybe a person, but, you know, what type of person, what kind of person would you like to collaborate with that you haven't yet?
Someone like Shepard Fairey.
Why is that?
I really appreciate his body of work and his fearlessness. I really like this, the whole kind of street art, culture.
And finally, your favorite Vermont food and or drink.
Food and or drink. So going in both the relaxing and the partying directions. Alchemist beer.
Yeah.
Haven't met one of their drafts that I didn't really like and appreciate.
Yeah.
And also PK Coffee makes the best lattes and chais.
And that's right around here.
A treat.
Yep.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, how can people find you and your work and what you're up to online?
So my website, which is kellyholtart.com. Is probably the best way.
Yeah.
And social media at Kelly Holt Art.
Okay.
Yeah,
you have a Instagram.
I try to stay current with. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be the go-to spot, especially for artists.
It's a great way to find like-minded artists, too, and kind of, you know, people to collaborate with or
have you made any connections through social media that you had, like, that you first made through social media?
Yeah, then? Some other photographers I have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then kind of built into in real life or at least a steady...
In some cases, yeah. Send them a comment here or there and then find out where they're exhibiting and meet them. It's kind of fun.
Well, thank you for taking time to talk today. I've been speaking with Kelly Holt. We're here at the Edgewater Gallery in Stowe, where she curates. I want to thank you for your time again. You can follow Vermont Favorites on Facebook to find out about upcoming guests, and you can share. I'm going to say that again. And you can subscribe to the podcast and catch up on any episodes you've missed at imadeitup.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Vermont Favorites is a production of WBTV LP Burlington, online at 99.3wbtv.org. I'm Adam Rabin. Thank you for listening. Take care.
Thank you, Adam.